Welcome back to another podcast, and this month we are celebrating National Pets Day, which was on the 11th of April.
National Pets Day is all about showing appreciation for our furry friends. Pets bring us companionship, joy, moral support, and chewed up slippers.
In this month's podcast, Matthew interviews Molly from PETA.
Dan and Poppy and myself speak with Daisy from Four Paws, a global animal welfare organisation.
Poppy and Matthew are joined by Esme from the RSPCA, and later in the podcast, Navid, Andrew and David speak with Lara from Magic Ponies, a local company that works with therapy ponies.
We also explore animals that do amazing things and the animals that we know and love from the silver screen.
To start the podcast off, Matthew interviews Molly from PETA, a popular animal activist group.
Okay, well, we are interviewing Molly Elston and Steve from PETA. So good afternoon, Molly.
Hi, Matthew. Thank you so much for having me.
That's okay. No worries. Okay, so the first question is, can you tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Absolutely. So I work for the animal rights charity PETA, and my role is a campaigner. So what I do is I work to increase public awareness about veganism and animal rights. And I do a lot of on the ground work, organising protests, demonstrations and other actions to increase that public awareness, and also to urge our target as an organisation to make decisions or adopt policies that reduce animal suffering. So I'm vegan myself. I've been vegan for, I think, about 5 years now. And I made the connection one time. I was travelling in Asia and I think I ordered some kind of chicken dish. And over there, they really do serve up the entirety of the animal. So over here, I think I was quite used to processed meats, but they served up the head and the feet and everything. And it was that point that I made the realization that what I'm eating was, you know, once a living, feeling being. So I made the decision to go vegan. And yeah, one of the best decisions I've ever made. And I'm very grateful to now be working, spending my every day fighting for the animals and aiming to reduce their suffering.
And what does a PETA stand for, and what does PETA do?
So PETA stands for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. So our international entities form the world's largest animal rights organisation, with over around 9 million members and supporters worldwide. So we work...
Wow.
Yeah, pretty big. Yeah, I mean, like I said, we work all across the world. So our biggest entity is PETA US, but we also have PETA UK, PETA France, PETA Germany. It's a bit of a memory game remembering them all. PETA Netherlands, Asia and Australia, I think all of them. And what we do is we basically just work to end the use of animals. So we do undercover investigations, animal rescue, demonstrations, work on litigation, and basically everything we can think of to do to reduce their suffering. The majority of our work focuses on the four areas where the largest number of animals suffer the most intensely for the longest periods of time. So that it's amazing work, primarily to reduce work for the animals used in experiments for clothing, entertainment and food, but everything else that comes into it, whether it's the killing of animals that are considered pets or cruelty to domesticated animals as well. Any form of cruelty, we are there working on it.
And what are some of the campaigns that PETA are working on at the moment?
Great question. So one of our main ongoing campaigns that we have is drawing attention to speciesism. So if you haven't heard of it, speciesism, quite a mouthful to say. It's the kind of misguided belief that certain species are more important than others. and it's how we as humans justify exploiting and mistreating animals. So I think if you think about it, ever since we're young, we're kind of taught to categorize these different animals. So we've got cats and dogs that we are taught to love and care for and keep in our homes. We've got other animals such as cows, chickens and pigs that we see as food. And then, you know, other animals such as rats and mice, which are pests. These animals all have the same capacity to feel pain and fear and stress, and the same capacity to love and feel joy. Really, we want to just challenge this mindset that there's these differences between animals that make some acceptable to kill and others not to, and remind everyone that all animals have a desire to live. So what we do is, you may have seen, we do a lot of billboards or a bit of do some crazy kind of demonstrations where we swap the image of an animal that's traditionally killed for food with an animal where we would an animal that we'd keep in our home, like a dog or a cat. So for example, recently I set up a cat monger stall in the center of Cardiff. So instead of selling fish, yeah, we were selling cats, not real cats of course. Against all of our principles. But we can just tell from people's responses, everyone was obviously horrified, as they should be. And we're asking people, well, if you feel horrified at the thought of eating a cat, then extend that compassion to fish and to all other animals by going vegan. So, yeah, that's probably just one example of what we do and that kind of work. But of course, we also have other campaigns for animal experiments and the fashion industry and animals and entertainment as well.
Okay, wow, that is absolutely great. So how can we as public be aware and try our best to avoid tourist traps and industry that take advantage of animals like elephant rides in Thailand and camel rides in Egypt?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think a lot of people do want to see animals whilst they're on holiday.
So my late grandparents, they went on them and they had amazing time on them.
Absolutely understand why people would have that experience. But I think we can also have so many amazing experiences whilst we're connecting with animals in a way that's also kind to them. And a lot of it is about awareness, because we are sold these trips, whether it be camel rides or elephant rides. And, you know, we're told that it's good for the animals and it's something that animals enjoy, because of course we don't want to do it if we're told that it's going to hurt the animals.
Yeah.
So the more that we can just educate people and show them the videos. I mean, unfortunately, PETA Asia have done so many investigations into the camels in Egypt, the conditions that they're kept in with little food or water, having to trek for hours at a time with no rest. The more that we can show what actually happens behind the scenes, the more we can realize, actually, I think I'd rather do something else which doesn't involve hurting animals. And, you know, yeah, So many things we can do when we go on holiday. It's more often that we've got too many things that we want to do and not enough time. So there's always ways to incorporate seeing animals, but also seeing the sights, enjoying the sunsets, but not hurting animals at the same time. So my biggest advice would be, if you do want to see animals, just to make sure that those animals are in their natural habitat, so they're not enclosed in a zoo or anywhere where they're unable to escape, or to see them at an accredited sanctuary. So there are so many places all over the world that work to rescue animals from abuse. And you can go there and not only have a lovely interaction with them, but also perhaps give your time and your energy to helping with some tasks or some chores that you're doing around the sanctuary. And as well as that, just making sure that you never pay for any animal rides, like you mentioned, camel rides in Egypt, donkeys in Santorini, horse and carriages or elephants in Asia. And I know it can look very nice from the outside, but what happens to, you know, elephants in Thailand, for example, is just so, so awful. They go through this process that's called Bajan, I think, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, literally means crushing in Thai. And what they do is they take these baby elephants from their mothers, they take them from the wild, they immobilize them, and they just subject them to relentless torture for weeks, maybe even months, until their spirits are just completely broken and they're traumatized and injured. Some of them don't survive, but it just means that then they'll do whatever the handlers want them to do going forwards, because they're so scared of being hurt, and yeah, they have no will left. So really, I could not encourage people more not to support these places. And if you do want to see elephants, of course you can still see elephants whilst you're abroad. There's so many sanctuaries. One that comes to mind is called Boon Lots Elephant Sanctuary, I think, where you can see them, you know, happy in their natural environments, rather than paying them to ride them or bath them or see them being painted or performing circus tricks.
Wow. And is there anything that stands out to you as a massive success story for Peter recently?
Yes, and I absolutely love that you asked this question, because one of my main areas of work is on animals that are exploited for entertainment. And only just a few weeks ago, we had a huge victory because Jet2 Holidays, who are the UK's largest tour operator. Yeah, did you see?
Yeah.
So they announced that they would no longer sell tickets to marine parks, which imprison orcas and dolphins. So this was a campaign that we've been working on for almost 2 years. And winning it really is great news, not just for us, but for captive marine animals everywhere. Just a few weeks before that, actually, we also saw EasyJet announce that they will not sell tickets to not just marine parks, but any animal attractions whatsoever. Also, Thomas Cook, Virgin Atlantic Holidays, and British Airways Holidays. So it really is only TUI left that are still selling tickets to marine parks. But we're hoping that, absolutely huge for the animals in marine parks, and just paving the way for what the future of travel will be, when no animals are imprisoned or harmed in any way.
Okay, so the final question is that the BBC has got airing cut in 2018. Animal rescue centres are to the brim. What are the dangers in dog breeding, and is it worth getting a puppy?
So my answer to is it worth getting a puppy would be, if they are a rescue puppy, yes. If from a breeder, then absolutely not. So Peter's motto has always been adopt and never shop. So when we think about breeding animals, we're talking about killing them, because in theory, practically every time a breeder brings another puppy into the world, there's a dog waiting in an animal shelter or struggling to survive on the streets who loses their chance of finding a loving home. So to put it into perspective, it's estimated that 20,000 dogs are euthanized in the UK every year because there aren't enough good homes for them.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? So just bringing more dogs into this world that's already full to the brim of dogs needing homes is cruel and irresponsible. So not just for the dogs that are there without homes, but also for those dogs that are brought into the world themselves, because this breeding industry really just sees these living individuals as commodities to be genetically manipulated for profit. And so nowadays we're seeing so many dogs with so many long-term physical disabilities and health problems because they've been bred to look a certain way. If you think about the flat-faced dogs that we have, such as pugs and French bulldogs, to all the other breeds that we have, such as sausage dogs that we know have got so many health problems. Absolutely, the best thing that we can do is to adopt. I've got a beautiful rescue dog myself called Leela. She's from North Macedonia. And I really feel like not only is having a dog a loving thing to do, but when they're a rescue, the love that they have is just so much more meaningful. And it's so rewarding every day seeing them come out of their shell and become a bit more them and learn new things and become more confident. And it's just such a rewarding thing to do. So, there are so many shelters in the UK and abroad as well you can get puppies, you can get older dogs. There is a dog out there for you.
Amazing. I just want to say that thank you for your time and what you do. It's absolutely amazing.
Well, thank you so much for having us on and, you know, for your support, for allowing us to share all of this information. So thank you so much.
Animals are often used in work to make our lives easier or for entertainment, and Hollywood is no exception. Let's talk about some of our favourite paw listers. We're going to take the next 2 minutes to take the time to appreciate the animals that have taken to the screen. Let's start with the yellow bricks in Oz, where we meet our little friend Terry, most famously known as Toto. Starring in films next to Shirley Temple and Judy Garland, and even performing her own stunts in the iconic film The Wizard of Oz. This earned her a whopping $125 a week, which is the equivalent of $2,700 today. More than most of the many humans actors at the time, so it was only fitting she attended the premiere. She has a total of 23 film appearances in her catalogue, but her film from The Wizard of Oz is what led her to officially change her name to Toto. There's even a permanent memorial for her at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery in LA.
Bounce the Bear was one of Hollywood's best animal stars. The Alaskan brown bear was born in 1977 and was brought in by Utah animal trainer Doug Zeus. Bart started to train and act in the 1980s. Bart co-stars included Steven Seagal, Anthony Hopkins, and Alec Baldwin. Bart even attended the 70th Academy Awards ceremonies to present the oversized envelope for best sound effects editing for Titanic.
From giant stars to tiny stars, it's Crystal the monkey, and she wasn't earning peanuts. In just 5 of her movies, she holds a box office gross of over $2.5 billion, Hangover 2, which made $107.8 million in its opening weekend. She has worked with some of the biggest directors in Hollywood, and held her own with Oscar winners and stole scenes from top comedians. She appeared in her first film, George of the Jungle, with over 20 credits to her name, came her big break in Night at the Museum with Ben Stiller, and Crystal the Monkey was named as one of TV's highest paid actors in TV Guide magazine's 2012 annual list.
Now moving on to the Oscar award-winning film Anatomy of a Fall, where a woman is suspected of her husband's murder and her blind son faces a moral dilemma as the only witness. It's Messi who rose to fame during this film and was even given his own seat at the Oscars. Messi had to train for 2 months for the scene where his character Snoop keels over after being poisoned. This led to Messi winning the Palme d'Or, an acting award for animal performers that's handed out at Cannes every year.
As much as watching these furry friends on the screen brings us joy and endless laughter, the animals are put in situations that can be very stressful. Animals have often been put in dangerous situations, injured or even killed. More than 24 animals died during the production of The Hobbit.
The only way we know an animal won't be harmed during production is to not cast them. There are so many alternatives with modern technology, CGI or stock images, that can save an animal from a lifetime of suffering.
For more information, you can visit animalsinfilmandtv.com.
Or contact Peter's Animal in Film and Television Division at aftv@peter.org for more information. Nearly everyone should have heard of the RSPCA, the UK's largest animal welfare charity. Here at Choices Waves, we wanted to find what they've been up to recently.
We are joined, lovely Esme from RSPCA. Welcome to the show. My name is Poppy.
My name is Matthew. So my question is, can you tell us a little about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to say thank you so much for inviting me to come onto your podcast. It's actually the first podcast that I have been involved with. So yeah, super exciting. So I work at the RSPCA and I am a science and policy officer and I work within the companion animal department. So that's covering the species that we view as pets. And I'm really responsible for making sure that everything that we say about these animals is scientifically accurate and valid. And I also work on some very specific campaigns. So I work on fashion breeding and some other bits like that. But really, it's just about making sure that we're getting everything right from a scientific point of view.
What does RSPCA stand for?
So it stands for the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals.
And what does the RSPCA do and what services do you offer?
So we believe that all animals deserve our kindness, whether or not they're pets in our homes, animals on farms, animals in labs, or animals in the wild. And we work really hard to make sure that we speak up for all of these different animals, that we protect them from cruelty, and that we rescue and that we and care for them when needed.
Okay, thank you. A lot of animals are rehomed. Do you have any advice for people if they are thinking about getting a new pet?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really great question, Poppy, and I'm so glad that you brought it up. I would say that it's incredibly important for people to think so carefully and at length before they get an animal. It's a huge commitment, and really they need to be thinking about things like costs, because animals cost a lot of money, and I know I have two rescue dogs. They need to be thinking about who will look after it if you're away. And the kind of time constraints that come with having an animal. You can't leave a dog, for instance, at home all day alone. So you have to have all these kind of thoughts going through your head. And you also need to look at the environment and the kind of animal you're thinking about getting. So does that match your life? Do you have the space for it and the time and the resources? So some of these things need to be considered as a whole family or whatever your situation is. But the other thing I'd say is that rescue is always best. So if you are planning on bringing an animal into your life, please do go and give one of your local rescue centres or the RSPCA a look and give an animal a second chance.
Have you noticed an increase in pet anxiety from the pandemic born pets?
Yeah, that's another great question, Matthew. Thank you. There is actually some science that's coming out now, which does show that dogs that were acquired during the pandemic, they're also known as pandemic puppies, do suffer with additional behavioural problems. So we are seeing that borne out in the science. And anecdotally, people that work in the industry are also seeing it. The reasons why are really complex, but it might have things to do with socialization and lack of ability to get used to the world because we were all cooped up.
What companion animals does an animal type of companion animals are there, and a mix and guide dogs?
Do you know what? Funnily enough, any animal can be termed a companion animal. There isn't really a scientific bracket which says that this is a companion animal. It's just any animal that lives in a companion setting. But at the RSPCA, we do tend to
have just several species which we say are companion animals, and that's dogs and cats, small furries, so rabbits, rodents, etc., and equines.
Oh yeah, can people donate and have a look on your social media platform?
Yeah, absolutely. If people wanted to donate and help us do the vital work that we're doing in protecting animals, then they can go to our website. And we've recently, well, today actually, launched our new brand and our new website. So I really do encourage everybody to go and check that out because it's amazing. And you will see there the links in terms of how you can then donate.
What charities do you do for the animals?
So we do lots of different things, to be honest with you, Matthew. I think the thing that we're probably most well known for is that direct rescuing and caring for animals and rehabilitating. So, wow. You know, animals that are injured and sick, wow, or have been abandoned, we look after them, rescue them and rehab them, wow, and try and find them new homes or put, wow, them back into the wild. It really depends on what the animal is, what kind of species it is. Quite often, if you find a wild animal, the best thing to do, and it's injured, is to try and take it to a local veterinary centre where the animal can be treated. If you have perhaps found a dog that's running loose, again, it can be really good to take them to a local vet because they can scan them there and check their microchip. Some dogs might have just run off. Or, of course, if you have, you know, concerns about an animal that might have been abandoned, then you can, you know, look on the RSPCA website and there it will have the advice about what to do.
You know, like any like open days where people can come and have a look at what you do or something like that?
I think that's a really great question. So the RSPCA has lots of what we call branches. So we're a federated structure and we have over 160 branches all around the country. Lots of them. And what you can do, you know, I'm based in Brighton and we've got a branch in Patcham. So that's the RSPCA Brighton Patcham branch. And you can have a little look on their website or their Facebook page. And quite a lot of these branches do lots of stuff in the community. They might have open days. They might have dog shows. They do lots of stuff to sort of fundraise and to get the local community involved. So it's a really good idea to have a little look in your area, wherever you are, and see which RSPCA branch or centre is local to you. And then specifically have a look at them and see what they're doing.
Anna, so how do we get involved with like any contacts that we can call for any advice on animals?
So I would say that the very best thing to do is look at the website. So the website is the best resource. We have got tons of information, really user-friendly. So it's not, you know, pages and pages. It's just nice and concise. It's all just been redone and it covers all the different species. So, you know, people who might be thinking about acquiring a pet or people who might not be sure what to do if they find an injured animal, all of that information is on our website.
Thank you, Emily, for taking your time to come and talk to us here on Social Scene.
Thank you, and anytime. Yeah, absolutely loved it.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you very much, guys.
They say pets can do amazing things, and in particular, dogs are a man's best friend. Something we could learn from animals is their empathy and compassion and loyalty. Animals have risked life and limb to protect and help us. Here is a list of animals who have done amazing things and caught our eye. This is Animals Do Exceptional Things.
We wanted to start with one of Britain's most gracious birds, the pigeon. Here is Sher Ami, a carrier pigeon that saved the lives of over 200 soldiers during the First World War. In 1918, they attempted to send multiple messages by pigeon, but all were shot down. It seemed hopeless, and they had but one pigeon left. A pigeon called Cher Ami. Cher Ami was their last hope, standing for dear friend in French. When the soldiers turned up to answer their pleas, miscommunication led to dangerous error as they were shelled by their own forces. Cher Ami, he was hit by enemy bullets and, despite falling to the ground, got back up again and carried on flying to deliver her message, saving the lives of over 200 soldiers at the cost of her leg. She had a prosthetic wooden leg made for her and was awarded the Oak Leaf War Cross Medal on her return for delivering a total of 12 messages during the war. Unfortunately, she passed away the following year in 1919, but was sent to a taxidermist to preserve her memory and her body, and is now on display at the National Museum of American History alongside our second animal hero, Sergeant Stubby.
Sergeant Stubby is one of the most decorated service dogs of the First World War and was in 17 battles. He was a stray dog that stood around and watched the army soldiers training. One day he was adopted by Robert Conroy, a soldier who started teaching him tricks like being able to salute. When getting deployed, Conroy snuck him aboard the troop ship inside his jacket, but he was later discovered by an officer. Stubby saluted him with one of the tricks Conroy taught him, and they let him stay on board. Stubby could detect the smell of gas bombs before anyone else could, and would bark, alerting the rest of the soldiers. This obtained him his first military rank and became an official member of the army. He would help wounded soldiers and even helped identify a German spy, which is why he gained his rank of sergeant. So many medals, they gave him a suede coat to put them on. And in 2018, he was honored by a film called Sergeant Stubby, an American Hero, starring Helena Bonham Carter.
Speaking of dogs identifying gas, we now go all the way to Philadelphia very recently, where Kobe the Husky, nicknamed the dog that saved Christmas, saved not just lives of his owner, but the entire street. Kobe is a husky, which originated from Siberia and are famously known for being used as sled dogs due to their natural pack mentality. People in the neighborhood noticed a dog digging at the concrete and were confused at what he was looking for. His owner had a look, but couldn't see anything either. It turned out there was a deadly gas leak that would have gone unnoticed if Kobe had not followed his nose. Since his recent fame and viral story, his owner, Janelle Bell, has published a book titled The Dog That Saved the Block Before Christmas. And he also has his own Amazon store where you can purchase your own gas detector. But it isn't only dogs who are the heroes of a household, as we next speak about Tommy the Tabby Cat. It was on a Thursday in 2006 that police received a 911 call. Although strangely enough, no one was on the other end of a line. The police called back. But again, there was no answer. Officer Patrick Doherty thought it was best to go to the apartment to make sure everything was okay. He discovered a man on the floor called Gary, and he had fallen out of his wheelchair and couldn't get back up. Tommy the Tabby Cat was sitting next to the phone, which was on the floor in the living room. He had fallen too far to call for help for himself. Tommy had been trained to dial 911 in case a situation like this occurred, and Tommy's quick thinking saved his life. Gary had originally adopted little Tommy 3 years before the incident to help lower his blood pressure. So it seems it would be the second time that Tommy had rescued Gary.
So usually, monkeys aren't allowed to be involved in public transportation, but Jack the baboon is an exception. Purchased by a South African man in the 1880s called James Eden White, James had lost his leg in an accident, which is why he'd trained Jack to push him around in a trolley. He taught him how to look after the whole house, and his biggest achievement was when he figured out how to run an entire train station. When these old-timey trains approached, they'd blow their whistles, and each whistle blow indicated which track they needed to go down. The baboon quickly learned how to operate the levers. Apparently, railway managers even tested the little guy to see if it was safe to have a monkey in charge of the switches. Jack passed with flying colours. Jack was even paid 20 cents a day, plus at least half a bottle of beer each week. Jack worked as a signal monkey for nearly a decade before finally retiring the last lever in 1890. All aboard! All aboard! Pets can always be heroes, whether it's saving lives in World War I or stopping street explosions, fetching your paper or slippers, or just being a friendly face you see every day. Pets really do exceptional things.
Animals are doing exceptional things, and there are organisations that also do exceptional things to help animals. Next up is Stacey from Paw Paws. Hi, this is Dan. Today we have Daisy from Four Paws, a global animal welfare organisation.
So, Daisy, can you tell us, please, Daisy, a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I work in the campaigns department in the UK branch of Four Paws. So, as you mentioned, we are a global organisation. So, we work all over the world. We have offices in Europe, Asia, Africa, Australia, all over, but I'm based in our UK office. So while we do cover the international stories, they work on topics much closer to home. So things like trying to prevent puppies from being bred in cruel conditions here, or things like talking to UK fashion brands to try and get them to improve their animal welfare policies. A lot of the work we're doing at the moment involves lobbying work, so trying to get bills passed in Parliament that would really, really improve animal welfare across the country. So currently we have the Livestock Exports Bill, which if it gets passed, it would ban live animals like cows, sheep, pigs, lots of others, from being transported thousands and thousands of miles from Great Britain to other countries for weeks on end. So, you know, it's pointless and cruel because all that happens is when they get to the other end, they're just slaughtered anyway. So there's lots of bills going around that would improve animal welfare. And if all goes to plan, hopefully we'll see them pass and we've got our fingers firmly crossed.
Hi, Daisy. Can you tell us, can animals ever be released back into the wild?
Yeah, so in many circumstances they can. It's usually more possible with younger animals or animals that haven't been in captivity long. So if they're rehabilitated from quite a young age, or they still have the life skills able to survive on their own in the wild, then they should be able to be released. For example, our orangutan forest school in Borneo is made up of orphaned orangutans whose human caregivers will teach them everything they need to know to survive. So they will be able to be released once they reach maturity. But on the other hand, most of the bears that live in our sanctuaries can't be released because they've been kept in captivity for so long, some of them over 20 years, which is most of their life. So they just wouldn't know how to survive on their own anymore. So it just depends on the age of the animal and the life experiences that they've had.
Daisy, bear being a sought-after ingredient in traditional medicine for 3,000 years. Campaign about the saddest bears in Vietnam. And we were wondering, do these medicines work or are they old wives' tales?
So, yes, they are old wives' tales. There is no scientific evidence that traditional medicines that use animal parts work at all. Understandably, it's very ingrained in the culture. As you said, it's been used for over 3,000 years, some traditional medicines. So it's very difficult for us and other organisations to come in and say, you know, you should stop using this and you shouldn't be doing that. A lot of it is about education and explaining that the animals being used are often endangered. And if we keep mistreating them at the rate we currently are, that they won't be around for much longer, sadly. And we're also trying to get the message across that there's lots of herbal alternatives out there that could be used in place for things like vile bear and other animal parts that are used because, as I've said, there's just no proof that it works. But we are seeing quite a good amount of progress. So since bile extraction was made illegal in Vietnam in 2005, the number of bears kept on bear farms in the country has gone down from well over 4,000 bears to now there's just under something like 250, which I think is a 94% reduction. So while there's still work to be done, we are definitely moving in the right direction, which is great.
So you've already mentioned orangutan forest schools and that usually involves. Can you tell us about what a day-to-day rota routine is like with them?
Yeah, absolutely. So our forest school is basically just the context where we rescue and rehabilitate the orphans that have been confiscated by the Indonesian authorities. So most of the orangutans will come to the school very, very scared, very traumatized. Most of them have been taken from their mums by, you know, horrible humans, or might have even seen their mums be killed in front of them. So, you know, they're very, very traumatized animals. But when they come to the school, they will all have human caregivers that will every single day be teaching them all the skills that they would have been taught by their mum in the wild. So their days will consist of going into the jungle, finding food. The caregivers will teach them how to use tools, how they should be building nests in the trees, and, you know, how to recognize different predators, so snakes and things like that that could harm them. Their human caregivers sort of become like surrogate mums for them during their time at a forest school. Obviously, it's not as good as their real mums. There's no replacement for growing up as a wild orangutan, but it's probably the best second option. And the ultimate aim is for the orangutans to return to living freely in the natural environment, like I said, once they're old enough and all these skills that they're being taught every day have kind of gone in and they can utilize them on their own and just live free in the jungle.
How can people get involved?
On our website, we have a whole section called Get Involved, where you can have a look at lots and lots of different options on how to support Four Paws. So people can fundraise by taking part in like a sponsored fun run or sponsored bike ride, or you can sponsor one of the animals in our care. So if you do that, you will then get regular updates on them and behind the scenes access to their lives at our sanctuaries. Or, to be honest, the simplest and easiest way is just to take action and sign our petitions and pledges for lots of different important causes. So we've got petitions going on at the moment asking the government to bring in a ban on selling fur in stores, or we've got a pledge called the Travel Kind Pledge. So if you sign that, you're kind of taking on a pledge to say that when you go on holiday, you're going to make sure that you don't include activities that might harm animals. So things like riding elephants or petting lion cubs in the long run always tend to harm the animals. So there are lots and lots of different ways to get involved, ranging from just clicking a button to sign a petition, or something a lot more rigorous, like doing a 5K sponsored run to raise money. Lots of different ways.
What's something that stands out as a proud moment working for Four Paws?
There's two that really stand out to me. I would say either Mark, the bear's rescue, or Kavan, the elephant's rescue. So Mark was the last what they call restaurant bear in Albania. So that basically means that bears there are kept in small empty concrete cages next to restaurants as a tourist attraction. So he wouldn't have had any grass under his paws, no enrichment to keep his mind occupied, nothing. So he was just there to attract people to come to the restaurant. And unfortunately, it does still go on in other countries, but Mark was the last restaurant bear in Albania. And we rescued him in 2022 and moved him to one of our sanctuaries in Austria, where he now lives really, really happily in a huge natural enclosure. He's got pools, he's got toys, and he gets to explore his habitat every day and just finally be a bear, which is incredible. And the other rescue I love talking about is Kavan, who we rescued at the end of 2020 from a zoo in Pakistan, actually. So he'd been on his own in a small concrete enclosure for many, many, many years, which would have caused him a lot of stress and heartache, because elephants are herd animals, so they naturally want to be with other elephants, and he was on his own. He was also chained and just in very poor condition. And eventually Four Paws was asked to step in and help him. So we, after a long, long time organizing it, transferred him to Cambodia Wildlife Sanctuary, where he now has a massive, massive pool. He takes mud baths. He gets to explore his huge, huge jungle enclosure every day. So another lovely story and two really proud moments for me. And you can keep up to date with these two and actually all of our rescued animals. We post about them quite a lot on our social media. So for Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, it's just Four Paws UK. So it'd be like Instagram/Four Paws UK. And you can see all of our lovely rescue stories there, lovely videos and pictures posted all the time.
What's next for Four Paws?
Internationally, we have got another couple of rescues happening later this year, which will be exciting. We'll talk more about that in due course, but I can't say too much about it for now. But in the UK, we are working on several parliamentary bills, like I said, that we're hoping are going to pass into law. So apart from the livestock exports bill that I mentioned earlier, we've also got another bill that, if it passed, would be fantastic. It would ban the import of puppies under 6 months old, as well as heavily pregnant dogs from overseas. So that would just make it really hard for horrible people to sell underage puppies. We've also got a third bill that would ban British trophy hunters from importing the animal trophies back into the UK. So three really, really important topics that cover farmed animals, companion animals, and wild animals. And we're going to be working really, really hard to get these bills over the line in the coming months and get them passed into law so that we can improve animal welfare in the UK. So lots of work to be done.
Where are you based in the UK?
So I'm personally based from Brighton, but our office is in London. But people travel from all over England to come into the office. We have some people that work in Scotland, but our main hub is in London.
I was actually wondering, how often did any petitions or bills in the past decade get passed?
Ooh, good question. So we've had a flurry of new bills come, but the most recent animal welfare bill to pass was the Sentience Act. I think that passed in 2021, and that was just basically saying that animals are sentient. So animals feel pain, they feel fear, and they should be treated with, you know, respect and kindness because they are a living being that has emotions. That passed in 2021. There were a few more bills meant to be passed, but unfortunately the government dropped them because they didn't have time, which was sad. There's also been a few smaller acts passed. So the Ivory Act has just come into law, and that basically makes it illegal to import ivory into the UK from elephant tusks. But that took a long, long time as well. The problem with Parliament and government bills is it can take years to go through. And then sometimes when it does go through, it doesn't become law. So it doesn't necessarily, you know, mean anything until a long time afterwards. We also had one a couple of years ago that meant for people who abuse animals, they could go to jail for up to 5 years. So before that, the maximum sentence was only 6 months, which was not long enough. You know, some people can be really, really horrible and do some really, really nasty things. So now they can have an unlimited fine and can go to prison for 5 years, depending on the crime, obviously. So that's another real success for us.
It would be donations. Is it a monthly thing or a yearly thing?
So it's completely up to you. You can do one-off donations when you just do it once and never again, or you can set up a monthly donation where you can pay as little or as much as you want. So it can be £1 a month, it can be £15 a month.
Okay, so please check out all the social platforms like Insta, Facebook. I can't get over how much people are so cruel to animals who will hurt them, and why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. It just baffles. When she said it, I thought, is that it? And then she changed it to a 5 year.
Yeah, five years. But I think it should be life penalty, especially like with the ivory trade.
No. I could hear it in your voice that she was getting a little bit emotional as she was saying.
Animals working isn't always a bad thing. If they are treated with respect and trained right, some animals offer support and can help us with day-to-day life. And Lara from Magic Ponies, which is a local company, tells us about her work and therapy ponies.
This week we're joined by Lara from Magic Ponies.
Hiya.
So, Lara, could you mind telling us a bit about what Magic Ponies does as a service?
Yeah, absolutely. So Magic Ponies is a pony ride company. We specialise in sort of pony parties, school fairs, events. We do a bit of pony therapy visits and home visits to the garden. And we have also just launching our own little semi-private riding school as well.
So you've just mentioned pony therapy. What exactly is pony therapy?
So we bring the ponies to home visits or sort of to care homes, centres, and the ponies are really, really good. You know, they provide sort of social support and physical and mental, you know, supports for individuals. And that sort of includes, you know, children with additional learning needs or adults as well. We provide visits to care homes as well.
So what ponies do you have?
We have four ponies with the business. Dexter and Merla are our main ponies who we provide the mobile visits with. And I do also have two other ponies as well, Dolly and Doodle. Dolly and Doodle were sort of both came to me for a second lease of life. One was from a riding school locally, and Doodle had been semi-retired for a number of years, but has now proved to be a very good pony for what we use him for.
You probably get asked this a lot, but it's still worth mentioning. What made you decide to set up the ponies to begin with?
I always like answering this question. When I was about 12 years old, my mum actually organised an event with our local church, and she invited Gemma, who had the business before me, and it was called Pony Magic before, and she came along and provided pony rides for this event. And I was a very keen horse rider, and I asked to come and help her along with her parties and events that she was doing. And I worked for her on Saturdays and Sundays and school holidays whilst I was at school and growing up. And I did go off and do different careers before I started Magic Ponies. But in 2020, right at the beginning of 2020, just as COVID was starting, I actually got let off from my job. I lost my job. And Gemma had suggested about giving me, selling me the business. So she did, and I spent the whole of lockdown working on it and, you know, revamping everything, slightly changing the concept of it and basically making it into a full-time job for myself.
Have you got any upcoming events over the summer?
The summer period is always really busy for us. We are doing some owner pony days over the summer holidays. We also have quite a lot of mobile events we will be attending. And then sort of later in the summer, sort of towards the autumn time, we have our next big event. We just had our Easter event, and we'll have our Halloween event coming up sort of October time as well. So with the therapy visits we do, you know, some of the children that I have, they feel much more confident and comfortable with having the visits at their home. One girl in particular, she was very nervous about stepping outside of her home and hadn't done for a very long time. And she's now very confident being on the, you know, on her front garden with the ponies and interacting with them outside the house. You know, for certain children, they prefer us to come to them. It just basically means they're more comfortable if they need to go inside and get anything. They know their surroundings, and I actually find it works a lot better like that. We do also provide visits to care homes as well. And sometimes the ponies do go inside. Lots of people always ask, what happens if they poo inside? And we just clean it up. but yeah, they're really lovely. They do go around the care homes. And it's just amazing to see how happy everyone is when they see them. Some children do also come to visit us as well, where all of our sessions are like on a one-to-one basis. It's also quite a comforting environment for them.
What's horse riding genuinely like, or, you know, horse riding with children? Because, I mean, last time I did it, which was like decades ago, I thought it ended up being quite nerve-wracking for me.
Yeah, that's a really good question as well. It can be nerve-wracking. Even I still struggle a little bit as well. And especially, I think, where I've got older and I've got more responsibility, definitely that fear factor has set in quite a lot. But I think it's a bit like riding a bike. Once you learn how to do it, it's just sort of natural instincts kick in. But for example, one of my personal horses, who I also keep at the barn, is very difficult to handle. And sometimes I just put that aside and my fears and my worries, because I remember how much I wanted to do it and how long I wanted to do it for. That's something that I explain to the children who come riding as well. There is always going to be that initial fear when you don't know what's going to happen. But then if anything does happen and you do have a little incident or something, it's always best to get back on and try again. They're never going to grow and it, you know, sort of do well if they don't try and restart.
I know this is mostly focused to people of a younger age, but is there any training involved when it comes to learning to ride?
So we're not actually a riding school, and the services that Magic Ponies offer is for children ages 2 to 9 years old. However, sometimes we do get some, you know, mums, and actually just relating back to the last question, quite a common comment that I get from mums is, oh, I rode before and I went horse riding before and I fell off and I never wanted to get on and never wanted to start it again. And again, that's why it's so important, you know, for me, for children, to give them a good experience and to make sure that if anything does happen, they do get back on and, you know, they don't have that fear set in. Unfortunately, there are a lot of riding schools in the area that have shut down. So I am very grateful to be able to have Magic Ponies and carry on with it. And because of that, one day in the future, we may start providing services for slightly older children to actually be able to ride, and maybe even adults one day as well. On social media, it's at Surrey Magic Ponies on TikTok, Instagram and Facebook. And we do have a YouTube channel as well, which I will be restarting very soon. But we do have some videos on there as well. Yeah, just touching on the point that I mentioned earlier is that at the moment, I'm sort of working on a big launch about the actual riding lessons that we will be providing. And this has come off the back of, unfortunately, a few riding schools have shut down locally. And I just want to make sure that there is that opportunity that I had as a child to learn to ride affordably. And in a good way where, you know, the educator is going to teach about pony care as well as riding and not just solely focusing on the riding side.
Okay, thank you for speaking to us, Lara.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
A great way to teach yourself is by doing something that we enjoy, and what's nicer than cozying up on the sofa with a good movie. We want to talk about some of our favourite animal films to help us have compassion and to take action from animals. Fish belong in the ocean where they can swim freely and not in the tank. In Finding Nemo, we follow a father fish who looks for his son who has been fishnapped and seems to be kept in the tank. Just like all animals, fish have feelings. They want to be free. Fish are fed, not food. Let's not forget a classic Charlotte's Web. Wilbur the pig is in danger of being killed until he finds Charlotte in the web, shows everyone how amazing he really is. The Fox and the Hound showed us that hunting is no fun for the animals. In this film, we show Todd the Fox and Copper the dog, who are best friends, even though society tries to make them enemies. On the farm in England, chickens lay eggs every day, and if they don't, they end up being farmer's dinner. But these smart chickens have their own plans to escape getting into trouble on the way. Lastly, a bit more serious viewing, Blackfish, this documentary, go behind the scenes at SeaWorld to explore the horrible truth of neglect and suffering, including orphans. Here is expert dive deep into this documentary.
Thank you to all of our guests, and we hope that this has given you a greater perspective on animals.
And given you the confidence to challenge the mistreatment of animals worldwide. Join us next month when we talk about world hunger. Bye.
Goodbye. Thank you for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.